For one last time this semester, welcome back to The Lineup. Alongside Joel Palachuk and Ryan Croak, I'm Jake Bowen. Guys, our final show of the semester, why not spend it doing a full 30 minutes of college football? A lot of moving parts in this. Joel, I know you're excited, Joel.
I'm very excited.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one.
It's going to be a fun one. But before we can get to this whole college football playoff controversy, we got to start with how we got there with a couple of recaps. We'll start first last Friday night, Texas A&M and Texas. The Longhorns win 27-17. Joel or Ryan, I'm going to go to you first. What are your instant reactions for this one?
This game proves what me and you, Joel, have said all season. Texas A&M is not who everybody said they were. They were never the third best team in the country. Their record was extremely misleading. Their first game against an SEC team that's outside of the bottom nine in the conference standings, and they just got thoroughly outclassed. Does that mean Texas is somehow some team that we've been sleeping on all season? No, it doesn't. It means that A&M was never who they appeared to be. And we saw it against South Carolina in that first half. We saw how poorly Marcel Reed played then. And we saw that he has a performance like the one that he did in this game in him, and it came to fruition at the worst possible time for Texas A&M. 11-0 start, one of their best seasons in program history, and all of it goes out the window at the end. Not that they're going to miss the playoff, but they're not in the SEC championship game after seeming like a lock all year.
Yeah, I mean, I got to give Texas credit. They thoroughly exposed Marcel Reed. They proved he's a one-dimensional player. He was great on the ground, Jake. Don't get me wrong here, 71 yards, but the receivers were limited. Concepcion led with 57 yards, and those two interceptions on the last two drives for A&M are just unforgivable for Reed. They're unforgivable. But like I said, Texas did play a good game. And, you know, they realize that Arch Manning isn't this glorious quarterback that everybody thinks. And they leaned on the run, excuse me. They Correct. Knew their identity, including Arch Jake. He was fantastic with his legs. But how about Quantrevion Wisner? 19 He's carries, done. 155. He was running angry at that Texas A&M defense.
Yep.
This is an important game, I think, for Texas and Arch Manning's future. Highly unlikely that Texas get in. I think there's a path that they could. But going into next season, Arch Manning, the second half of the season, really played well. He was 6-for-8 in that second half, over 150, a couple of touchdowns, game-sealing rushing touchdown on his legs. He's really improving.
He's been much better, yes, but that's not the standard. Going into the season, this should have been the floor, not the ceiling.
And it was an unfair standard.
Correct. It was an unfair standard. He did show up at points throughout the latter half of the year, yes, and he did show some growth. But there's no beating around the bush. One of the most disappointing seasons after coming in with high preseason expectations that we've seen from a quarterback in recent years.
Right.
But undoubtedly so.
Yeah, I feel for him. He's improved, though. He's improved. I wanted to say, I'm sure you love this, Jake, that McDonough call looking like Grandpa when he got that game. I got goosebumps.
Sweet. That was sweet.
Great call for that. Yeah. Go ahead, two score run.
One
right
more
there.
Thing about Texas A&M I want to throw out there. Aside from that win against Notre Dame, which I know you know, you both know, I will argue is fraudulent. They haven't won a game, and this game against Texas, they haven't played a single team that's currently in the top 25. They outside of this game against Texas and that fraudulent Notre Dame win that I would argue is fraudulent. They haven't played a single game against a team that's currently in the top 25.
But, I mean, like, is that on them? Like, you only play who's in front of you.
My point is that's why me and Joel have been saying that they have not been as good as people have said they are, including you, all season long. And it got proven on the biggest stage.
They had a weaker SEC schedule.
Correct.
Which is still a tough schedule, but.
Listen,
it means more, Ryan.
It means more, sure.
The whole Texas thing. Besides that Florida loss, I mean, they had one of the best seasons. They
you
played
can't
five
the
top
can't
10 teams.
You ignore the Florida loss.
Just
ignoring
like,
the Florida loss is malpractice. Ignoring it's malpractice. We'll save that till later on in the show.
They had a better season, though, than I think people give them credit for.
Correct.
Yeah. Let's move now to the game. In Michigan, taking on Ohio State. Both teams, well, Ohio State in already, but Michigan, chance to pull off an upset and get in that college football playoff. That didn't happen. Ohio State took care of business, Joel, 27-9. First win for the Buckeyes over the Wolverines since 2019.
Listen, I dislike both of these teams. It is no secret, but I live for this game. This is what the sport is about. This is what college football is about. Four wins in a row for Michigan. Ohio State goes into Ann Arbor. Snow is falling. Ohio State loses communication in the fourth quarter. Coincidence? I don't know. We know how Michigan is a little sneaky. Just everything about that game is just, it's cinema. But this year, Sharon Moore and the Wolverines' luck just kind of ran out. It was a competitive game, don't get me wrong, but that Ohio State roster is just so good. They were not going to lose this time. It's as simple as that, guys. That's all I really have. They were going to win.
Yeah, I mean, Bryce Underwood coming into the year, one of the most hyped-up quarterbacks in the country.
Disappointing season.
Yeah, I would agree. But a guy who I think didn't get enough at respect coming into the season is on the other side, Julian Sayin. And, you know, do I think that this kid is the greatest thing since sliced bread? Absolutely not. But I got to give him credit for how he played today. He has been putting on a under-the-radar Heisman-caliber season, and he really made a case with this game. Started 0-for-2 with that interception, but then after that, 19 of 24, 233 yards and 3 touchdowns in the snow in a hostile environment in one of the biggest games, if not the biggest game, they'll play all season, even though they're going to be the number one seed heading into the college football playoff, depending on how that Big Ten championship game goes, obviously. But that game, you know, talk about it meaning more in the SEC. There were Ohio State fans last year who would have rather won the game against Michigan than won the national championship.
Right,
so for him
right.
to play the way he did on that stage was really impressive to me.
He was great. Under the radar, though?
Yeah.
No.
No.
When
has his name been atop the conversation? Not at any point this year until after this game.
I mean, he's been top three a lot of the time.
But when has he been? It's always been Mendoza.
I will give Ryan
him.
Credit. He's been in the conversation, but no one thinks he's the number one.
Correct.
Heisman.
No one views
candidate.
I don't
but
think
he's
he,
been in the top three.
I've thought him and Mendoza have been top two for that because that completion percentage is so impressive.
Listen, yeah. I think the reason why he played so well after that first drive, Bo Jackson. This freshman is
he was
elite.
Great. He was great.
117 yards, 5.3 a carry, 6.3 on the season. He's got a great name and is an even better football player. For Ohio State.
Yeah, and he just wouldn't go down. I was really impressed with his motor. He just would not get tackled.
Lamar Bo Jackson. You know that, right? That's crazy.
Lamar Jackson.
His real name is Lamar Jackson.
One other quick thing. Ohio State's defense had a better statistical defense this year than 2001 Miami, who had 4 Hall of Famers and 7 first-round draft picks.
Touchdown.
Yeah.
8-4.
That's video game.
I do want to say one thing. You mentioned the defense. They were great, and Michigan just doesn't have that firepower offensively. Mm-hmm. They had 163 total yards. And I was looking at all their drives. Their longest drive, time-wise, in the second half, 229. I mean, Ohio State had 40 minutes of possession time. Like,
yeah,
they just kind of took control. It was like what Michigan does to them, has done to them in the past. They outlast them in the second half, especially the fourth quarter. And this time, the script was completely reversed.
Yep.
Michigan set, though. They've got years to come with all those freshmen.
Bright future ahead.
We're going to wrap up with the Iron Bowl, another classic rivalry game, Alabama at Auburn. And Ryan, this game came down to the wire after the Crimson Tide were up 17-0.
Yes, it did. And you know what? I've been on the Crimson Tide all year. I've been on the Crimson Tide for 2 years now because I think Kalen DeBoer still remains the most disrespected coach in the country. But I have to be objective. This past month of Alabama football has not been impressive. And I'm concerned. I'm a little concerned, especially in this game. This is an Auburn team that won one SEC game all year. Now, I get that Nick Saban called Jordan Hare haunted, and, you know, I'm going to give them credit for winning a rivalry game every time. But listen, it wasn't pretty, and Alabama tried to give this game away on numerous occasions. They really, really did. And now, that final minute of the game for Auburn was maybe the worst final minute of a game that I could even imagine for a team. You have a fumble on the potential tying drive with under 40 seconds to go. You have a muffed punt that went out of bounds. Right. You lose 5. You had 10 seconds on the clock. If you just make the fair catch, you lose half of them when it rolls out. And then you have the final play just completely blown up. It was just a disaster for the Tigers. Crimson Tide, 10-2 to finish the season. I like what I see from them, but the past month, they just haven't looked like the way they have at the start of the year.
Right. I understand that. You have Simpson, 122 passing yards. I thought Ryan Williams was out or something. I mean, he played. He had no targets.
He's talking about a disappointing year.
I don't know what's going on with him, but I will say they didn't have that upset like they had against Oklahoma last season that ruined the playoff chances. Well, they did lose to Oklahoma, but, you know, they had the unranked
loss. I still think they're going to win the SEC title.
Also lost to Florida State.
They could. But, you know,
that game.
They made it. They made it. That's what they need to do, and they done it. They did it. But Auburn, they gave the game away.
How about Ashton
Daniels?
Like
you said, and that interception by Ashton Daniels wasn't his fault at all. It was the deflection off of the check down. That was just cringeworthy to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just didn't go Auburn's way?
No.
What a game, though, from Daniels. 108 rushing yards, 350 total.
He was excellent.
That's just the appetizer, though, because coming up next, we're taking a look at the college football coaching roulette that's been circulating around the past week. Stay with us. You're not going to want to miss it. Back on the lineup alongside Joel Palachik, Ryan Croak, I'm Jake Bowen. Guys, it's time to get into the head coaching changes, signings that have happened over the past week. And we got to start with the biggest headline. Lane Kiffin going from Ole Miss to LSU. Your instant thoughts on this whole debacle of a situation.
It was crazy, man. I mean, you had Florida in the mix there. They were out. They got Summerall, and he went to LSU. My first thoughts, just kind of an immature handling of it by Kiffin. I mean, that's a really tough decision, especially having to make it before the playoffs. But I just didn't think he handled it very well. He's taken a lot of offensive staff with him to LSU, which is great for the Tigers. I did see that Weiss, their OC, he will be coaching for Ole Miss in the playoffs, which is great for the Rebels. But I really feel bad for the Rebels. I mean, this is one of, if not the greatest regular season they've ever had.
First 11-win season,
there you go. And I've said on this show, I think they are a legit national championship contender. Maybe not anymore. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Jake used the word debacle, and I really don't think there's a better word to describe this situation. Here's the thing with this whole thing for me. It comes down to the calendar. Now, I completely agree with with Kiffin's handling. It's totally immature. This is a guy who loves the spotlight. It's another messy exit. It happens so many times. It's a Kiffin thing. It is what it is. He handled this poorly. Because a lot of other coaches are in a similar situation, and they all handled it better than him. So let's just get that out of the way. But the real problem is the college football calendar. Because just listen to this, Jake. Today started the early signing period. We've seen it all day. Recruits signing with these teams as recruiting signing is now officially open. The college football playoff begins in a couple weeks. The conference championship games have not been played. Transfer portal opens January 2nd. The national championship's on January 19th. And now February 4th is the official national signing day. So what that basically means is that free agency begins before we know who the Big Ten and SEC champions are. Free agency begins before the playoffs begin. That's putting it in NFL terms, essentially. That's absurd. No professional league does it, and college football and the NCAA shouldn't do it either. It's absurd, and I think that Kiffin got put in an awful spot because of the calendar. You see Penn State, obviously, the whole reason you fire James Franklin early in the season, you want to get a coach in so you have recruits on early signing day. Now, we're going to talk about that in a second. But back to Kiffin. Kiffin got put in an awful spot because of the calendar. Did he handle it poorly? Of course he did. He made a big spin of it. He was keeping people on the hook. He was leveraging every situation he had, and he ended up going with LSU. It is what it is. Wanting to coach Ole Miss in the playoff is absurd, but it's a decision he shouldn't have to make because the calendar puts him in that tough spot. Kiffin is a victim of the circumstance, and while he handled it poorly, he shouldn't be completely villainized for how this thing's played out. The calendar is the main problem.
I agree.
There are a couple things here. First of all, college football, the way it's run, it's beautiful to watch. It's just dysfunctional. And that's why the NFL will always be run better and is a better sport, because college football doesn't have the people behind it to make it function properly.
Doesn't mean the NFL is well run.
The second thing,
it's not as fun, though.
The second thing I will say, that's debatable. The second thing I will say, I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on the situation he was put in. Look at
how
Kalani Sitake. He's staying. He's saying, I'm going to stay at BYU.
You know
coach.
What he's doing, though, because he's leveraging them to pay him the money. You know, Florida letting Summerall stay. Again, it's completely different with Kiffin, because Florida and Auburn, like, those are teams that have hired new coaches from these Group of Five schools and say, hey, if you get a bid, go coach your team in the playoff. It's different, though, for Kiffin, because he's leaving for a rival. He's leaving for an SEC team. He's not leaving. He's not jumping from FAU to Ole Miss. He's jumping from Ole Miss to LSU.
I still think LSU, the door is going to be open when he's done with the playoffs for Ole Miss. I don't think
if you're Keith Carter at Ole Miss, you cannot. Lane Kiffin is not bigger than Ole Miss. You're Keith Carter. You represent the biggest athletic program in the state of Mississippi. You cannot let Lane Kiffin say, hey, I'm leaving you for the prettier girl over there, but you know what? Let me stay around for a little while longer and make sure I get the most I can out of you before I go. Like, that's absurd. That's absurd. It's ridiculous. Ridiculous to suggest that Kiffin should have been coaching them in the playoff.
I think that's a terrible as a coach, though. You leave your team, a program that he has built. LSU was nothing before him. He came, he built that program. Wouldn't you want to finish that out?
I agree 100%. I would have rather seen him stay at Ole Miss. But again, that's Lane Kiffin's decision to make. Right. I'm not going to fault him for making the choice he made. I'm going to fault him for the way he handled that decision. And I think that was poorly handled by him.
Right. And you say a program that's Ole Miss is bigger than him. You want to talk about a program that's bigger than Lane Kiffin? It's LSU. You know, he's got to make that move. They're going to force him to.
Well, Kiffin, obviously the headline. We've got a couple of other ones to talk about. A couple of standouts. We each have one to pick from. Ryan, I see that smile. Who's your guy?
I have been waiting to talk about this for a long time. This is one that I've teased you with, Joel, for a couple days now, because I don't think you're ready for my pick. You've been speculating. You're expecting the Pat Fitzgerald answer. It's not Patty
Fitz. Or Chesney.
It's James Franklin at Virginia Tech.
Wow.
Listen. There is not a better situation for James Franklin. A team that has absolutely zero championship expectations, just wants to be relevant, a couple winning seasons, you know, have some fun, be in a bowl game, go win a bowl game, who cares, man? Go, come on, Mr. 10-win season James Franklin. Go beat whoever the heck you want in the whatever bowl, the Pop-Tart bowl. Go have fun, James. And that's exactly what he's going to do with these Hokies. I mean, talk about the recruiting. He's done a great job already. They're going to be a solid team in an awful conference, the ACC, that's just been embarrassed all year. It's a perfect fit. He has no championship expectation. There's no pressure on him to win these big games, to put them on the national stage like there is at Penn State. It's perfect for him. He can win 10 games against terrible teams, win every game he should win, and lose some games that go, well, do we really care? It's Virginia Tech. It's not blue blood. It's Virginia Tech.
Right. I mean,
it's
this
perfect for him.
Top 15 coach and not a top 15 program.
It's a match made in heaven. It really is.
Your pick, Joel.
You know, this is very recent. I have to go Brian Hartline to USF. The price isn't even out there yet. 6-year deal. I don't care what the price is.
Agreed.
That is an absolute steal. And I love the matchup because USF is already a great non-Power 4 team. And then you put in Brian Hartline with his elite level of recruiting and development.
Yep.
And I think he's one of, if not the readiest assistant to take that jump to head coach. I absolutely love the hire.
Yeah, before you go, Jake, I just one more thing I wanted to add. You could argue, even though that he has no head, I don't want to jump the gun because Hartline's first time being a head coach now. You could argue that USF got an upgrade at head coach.
You really can.
And that is, you can't ask for a better switch if you're USF. You really can.
One coach who I think is also just as ready to step up is Bob Chesney, the former James Madison coach, now go to UCLA. Look, this is exactly how it was for Kirk Cignetti. Going to a team that was irrelevant and turning them around. I don't know if Chesney's going to turn around to UCLA that quick, but I wouldn't be surprised if UCLA in a couple of years is contending. Listen, this year with James Madison, 17th best offense, 11th best defense in the country. He's really revolutionizing this program.
Right. I love the pick. He's a great coach.
We're going to wrap up quickly talking about a coach. We're going to go to you, Joel, because it's your team, the Blue Blood. Who knows if they're Blue Blood now?
They're not a Blue Blood, but sure.
According to Ryan Croak,
they used to be.
Not Terry Smith. Penn State doesn't have a coach. So what do they do?
Listen, today is early national signing day. There's no head coach. They have the worst FBS class currently. This is just a dumpster fire. The search couldn't have gone worse. You get rid of Franklin hoping to have a plan, and Pat Kraft struck out on everything. Did he even have a plan? I'm not sure. And you want to know what he did that's the most impressive? He did something that not even to the level of James Franklin. He managed to disappoint the entire Penn State fan base tenfold what Franklin ever did. It is absolutely horrendous. It's his one job. This is the biggest moneymaker at Penn State, and he utterly failed. And you know, if he can't get DeBoer to switch somehow by a miracle and to jump ship and come to Penn State, he better clean his desk, start packing his house up, and get out of state college. And if I'm Penn State, you absolutely have to hire Terry Smith. He knows the culture. He knows the program. Make it a 2-year bridge type of thing like what they did with Bill O'Brien. But if there is anybody that's going to redeem those actions, that the incompetencies of Pat Kraft, it's Terry Smith. And similar to linebacker Michael Mauty, he was a figure in Penn State history after the sanctions. The community rallied around him. He's somebody that the community is rallying around, and I really think he could just be a great fit for a few years there at the very least.
Yeah, I'll go quickly here. I mean, I've been preaching optimism throughout this. I said, hey, Brian Hartline's still available. But when I got that news this morning, that was the last string keeping me from saying this is an utter disaster.
Right.
And it dropped today, and it's just an embarrassment for Penn State. Brian Hartline was a dream target at the beginning of the coaching search, and now he's at a Group of Five school. You're telling me you couldn't get that guy locked up? What are we doing, Pat Kraft? It's really a disaster.
I don't think Kraft even took a swing at anybody. I'm going to be honest. I don't think he was really ready. He wasn't ready.
No matter what it is with the Hartline thing, it's just poor by Pat Kraft. No matter what happened in that. We don't know what happened behind the scenes, but whatever it is, it's an awful look for Pat Kraft.
All I will say is give the players what they want. Hire Terry Smith. Coming up next, we've got probably our most anticipated segment all year long, the College Football Playoff Committee. Wrapping up shop on our final episode of the calendar year on the lineup, Joel Palachuk, Ryan Croak. Let's not waste any time. Let's get into these college football, really, debates that have been heard around the country. We're going to start with you, Ryan. Probably the biggest one of them all, Miami, Notre Dame.
Yeah, well, buckle up, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to be the Apollo Creed in this segment to Joel Palachuk's Rocky, because here it is. Miami does not belong in the college football playoff. I don't care about head-to-head right now. Throw that out the window. A team with two unranked losses, the only team on the bubble, has absolutely zero case to be in the college football playoff over a team whose only two losses came to two teams who are in the top 12. There's no chance. I understand the argument. If Miami and Notre Dame are the final two teams, it should go to Miami. Fine. I will concede that point. It's the head-to-head argument that counts. Play the games on the field. Sure, it should matter. I agree. You don't want to devalue the games on the field. 100%. My argument's going to be, listen, Miami shouldn't even be sniffing Notre Dame because of those two unranked losses to Louisville and SMU. There are about 4 to 5 teams on the college football playoff bubble right now who aren't in a conference championship game. The ones that stand out to me, Notre Dame, Miami, Texas, and Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt, throw them out the window. Texas, you may have a case, this whole controversy over playing Ohio State week one and losing.
We'll get to them.
We'll get to them later. Miami's the only one of those four teams that has multiple unranked losses. Notre Dame and Vandy, their two losses came to two teams who are very, very good. They were ranked at the time. And we're talking about Miami in the same breath as these three teams. I just think it's absurd. Yes, Miami won against Notre Dame, but they only have one other win all season, against a team who's currently in the top 25. So their only win all season. And those two unranked, I understand they are 4-0 in ranked play.
Yeah.
Those three teams that were ranked at the time were terrible. Turned out to be awful. Not turned out to be awful in USF's case, but not good. Miami doesn't belong. Two unranked losses, that should eliminate you from the college football playoff discussion. It's as simple as that. Notre Dame is a better football team. You can't look me in the eye with a straight face and tell me they are not. And anyone who does, it's just absurd.
Right. You put that excellently. I mean, if it comes down to the two teams, you have to honor the head-to-head. Notre Dame would beat them by 3 scores right now.
Thank you.
It doesn't matter where it is.
So they should get in. Joel Palachuk agrees with me, everybody.
Miami should get in the head-to-head, and you look at the common opponents.
They don't belong up there.
3 out of the 4 common opponents, Miami beat by more points. But my biggest issue.
Common opponents is so ridiculous, by the way.
That pick game,
Notre Dame. My biggest issue.
Any given Saturday, but common opponents, pick one.
Is something that the committee has already done. You look at Texas and Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt lost on the road to Texas. Notre Dame lost on the road against Miami. Texas has a worse record than Vandy, but they still jumped them with that head-to-head win.
Deservedly so.
You see two teams with the same 10-2 record, and Miami doesn't jump them. That's the fault for me.
And my whole point is they shouldn't be right next to each other in the rankings. I think it's faulty by the committee. Miami should not be in this discussion is my point. Yes, they're 10-2. Yes, they have 4 ranked wins. I don't think it's a serious team with 4 ranked wins. Again, as I mentioned, only one of them is coming as a team that remains in the top 25 today. And they finished the season awful. They had the worst end of the season of any of those 4 teams on the bubble.
Yeah.
Listen, Miami, remember we talked about a couple weeks ago when Notre Dame played Pitt? You were kind of a little bit arguing how, you know, Pitt should try. Like, they shouldn't say we're giving up the head coach for Pitt. Well, Miami beat Pitt by more points than Notre Dame
again,
beat Pitt.
I will just say, listen, common
that's why you
got to
try.
I will say, you play the games for a reason. I don't care if it's week one, I don't care if it's week 16. There is no point if you're not considering head to head games, because then why do you play the game?
Right.
Again, I will hear you out on that all day long. My whole argument, again, has always been that Miami just simply doesn't belong. This debate shouldn't even be happening, is my point. Miami should not be the team knocking on the door, and Notre Dame should not be the team with 1 foot out the door. They should both, Notre Dame should be much further in, and Miami should be much further out. The fact that Alabama jumped Notre Dame, by the way, this got under the radar it's absurd. The fact that Alabama jumped Notre Dame this week the Iron Bowl, and that is huge, by the way. Huge implications, because it sets up Notre Dame to be the last team in.
There you go.
Which is absurd. It's absurd.
It puts them in the same bracket as Miami with the 10 through 12 teams.
That's
for consideration.
Right. The committee is setting themselves up I think they're setting themselves up to put Miami in.
They want
I think
people
it's ridiculous.
To get the popcorn
I
ready.
I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's absurd.
Well, you hinted a little bit about this, Ryan, but we're going to go to you, Joel, first. Texas 9-3, great wins, losses, what you got on Texas?
Listen, Texas, you know, like I said earlier, I don't think people give them enough credit for the season they had. They played five top 10 teams,
And
they went
3-2.
Pretty dang good.
Yeah.
But they should not be in the playoffs. They absolutely shouldn't. Three-loss team. The committee made that precedent last season with Alabama. I believe they were the first team out, and they had three losses. And you know, they should not be punished for playing Ohio State. And that's the argument you have there. Why even go out of your way to schedule that game? But what they should be punished for is losing to Florida.
Thank you, Joel.
Listen.
Thank you, Joel.
Alabama
Thank
lost
you.
To Florida State. Tennessee lost to Arkansas last year, and they got
listen,
in.
Listen. Three I have this written down in my paper because I knew exactly that this was going to get brought up. Bama might have the worst loss of Texas and Notre Dame and Oklahoma of those group of four teams. But Texas doesn't have the wins that Alabama does. They were the first SEC team in history to win four straight ranked games in consecutive weeks at the start of their conference play. By the way, they beat Georgia in Sanford. What happened to Arch and them boys? They got destroyed at Sanford. They got absolutely embarrassed. You want to talk about common opponent? There's a common opponent for you, Jake. Let's get that out of the way. How about Texas? And Texas has three losses. Joel said it right on the head. Florida? You lose to Florida? Florida?
It's a bad loss.
It's horrible.
Florida beat Florida State?
Oh, okay, congratulations. Florida beat Florida State.
We can play
is it
this
common
game
opponent
all
or is it not common opponent? You pick one. You pick one. And tell me,
listen.
Are you pro-common opponent or anti-common opponent? Pick one. Because you seem pro-common opponent in the case of Notre Dame Miami.
Listen.
But now it doesn't support your argument, so now it's out the window.
Texas, the first team since 2019 LSU to win three games against top 10 teams.
You know what happened with 2019 LSU? They didn't lose a game either, buddy. They didn't lose three. Certainly didn't lose three. They also had a quarterback who actually, you know, won the Heisman and played up to expectations and like your golden
boy. I think they should be rewarded for going on the road to play Ohio State, kept the closest margin of any opponent Ohio State's played.
Oh, gee, congrats. You played Ohio State.
They shouldn't be awarded, but they shouldn't be punished.
Listen, if they schedule Rice, then they get in.
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. Sure, they schedule Rice, they get in. I can understand that coming from, like, you can see that world. But again, I think people are too focused on the fact that they lost to Ohio State than the fact that they lost to Florida. It's ridiculous that has gotten swept under the rug in this whole situation.
They have three losses. There's just too many teams.
Correct.
Are they a playoff caliber team?
You want to
absolutely, but they have three losses.
I will tell you this. They belong more than Miami does.
Yeah,
I agree. They 100% belong more than Miami does.
On paper, yeah.
Correct.
Talent, yes.
100%. But the fact of the matter is, like I was talking about Miami's losses, I think, you know, wins matter for sure, but losses should not be ignored either. I was talking all about Miami's two unranked losses. Texas is the only other bubble team with an unranked loss. Right. So that's my argument there with Texas as well. They should be the first team out. That would be my argument. They should be, just like Bama was a year ago, the first team to miss.
Well, one team that could really shake this whole thing up and not even have to have us have this conversation is BYU. Ryan, I'm going to go to you. What happens if they win this Big 12 title?
It's really elementary. I'm not even going to waste breath on this. Texas Tech gets the last at-large bid. BYU gets the auto bid. Notre Dame's out. And there's no bubble teams in the playoff.
No Miami, no Notre Dame.
We got to make natty picks.
Well, yeah, this is our last show of the year. We won't be back until there's a champion. So we're going to go with our natty picks, natty prediction. Joel first, what you got?
Listen, mine is going to be pretty elementary. It's Ohio State. It's self-explanatory. They have too good of a roster. It pains me to say it. And whether they win or lose against Indiana in this Big Ten championship, they're not going to lose the second time they play them if they have to. Look at Oregon last year. They're going to be ready for that. And I want to say, I like Oregon. And I like Oregon for an opposite reason of last year. They got, you know, it was tough with the seeding for them last year. If they go into that 5 or 6 seed spot, They're going to be dangerous in the playoffs.
Yeah, talk about dangerous. They're my national championship pick. Yeah. I made that pick back in back when they beat Penn State in Happy Valley, and of course, I've stuck with it all year. I'm going to stick with it now. The Ducks are a very complete team. They're a very underappreciated team. Their resume is sneaky great, and they can beat anybody. I give them the best chance of anybody in the bracket to beat Ohio State. And I'll say this about the Buckeyes. Ryan Day has, throughout his career, has been good for one embarrassing loss all season. It hasn't come yet. That should scare people in Columbus.
I'm going to go Indiana. I think Indiana loses.
I like it.
In the conference championship, or they're going to win the second time. Listen, what happened to the one-seeded Oregon? They lost. They got killed, actually. And I think
killed is a stretch.
I think Ohio State, their time is coming. But that's
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so.
As we wrap up, last time, what's your favorite memory of the semester?
Favorite memory? Hating on Arch Manning.
Oh, the James Franklin fired show.
That is top.
That was our Super Bowl.
That's top.
I think a heartwarming moment between you two is when we agreed about the Patriots, that dark horse. That was cinema.
World peace is possible, ladies and gentlemen. That's great.
That's all the time we have. A fantastic semester on the lineup. Huge thank you to our executive producer, Thomas Hollebox, for all the work he put in this semester. But one more time, alongside Joe Plotchick and Ryan Croke.